everybody. Welcome to the program. Malloy here on Second Thought Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. We have quite a bit on the agenda today. If you went to MikeMalloy.com and read my mini blog, you'll see that I'm referencing the conservative political action committee, whatever it's called, that is gotten together in Washington, D.C., as it's wont to do every year. I remember about 4 years ago, Kathy, I got an invitation to that from the woman who handles the invitations. And I don't know who she was from Adam's House Cat, so I just wrote back using the F word rather liberally. And several right-wing bloggers picked up on it and, you know, got all over the Internet. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. I hope the right-wing bloggers continue to mention my name and just make sure you spell it right. But anyway, I was listening today to Sirius XM, to Hartman, Tom Hartman's program. And I'll be damned, Hartman has got, he's broadcasting from this event in D.C. You got to love Hartman. I mean, he walks, he's like Daniel in the lion's den, man. He just walks right in. He's got a table set up where all these geekoids are set up, and Hartman broadcasts from there. Well, when I tuned in, he was about to interview and did interview somebody from one of these supposedly libertarian organizations that is really just another right-wing organization that couches itself in, what did I say, Unitarian? Libertarian. Okay, that's what I meant to say and what I said. There are certain aspects of libertarianism that I find very very attractive. Left libertarianism, certainly not this right-wing garbage. But anyway, this guy sits down, and he's talking with Hartman. And I swear to God, Hartman just carved him a new body orifice, but without doing it like some radical freak, like, let me think, like I would. He would see, I use a howitzer. And knives and guns, and Hartman sits there with the scalpel and very carefully cuts these people's hearts out. And I got to tell you, I really, it's been a long time since I listened to Tom, and to listen to him do that to this guy today, it was just absolute brilliance. So the program tonight is dedicated to my once and possibly future colleague, Tom Hartman, who certainly knows how to slice and dice. It was so cool. He's going to be there tomorrow. I'm sound like I'm doing a promo for the Hartman program, but I'll tell you what, if you're out and about tomorrow where you can get near XM Sirius, or if you can pick him up on your radio, do it. Because he's going to be there, I think, for the rest of the week. Hartman's good. He's real good. I've said a million times, Hartman aims for the head, I aim for the gut. And he does a damn fine job. Damn fine job. So, and that's what, you know, I got home. I don't know where I went. I think I went to pick up Molly at preschool. And I got home after listening to Hartman. And I thought, damn, I'm going to have to write about that. Only not Hartman style, but Malloy style. So, anyway. Well done, Mr. Hartman. I've been asked to read this on the air right away. this has been verified by the FBI. And they have a website, FBI.gov. It's the newest scam that's out there to screw up your life and steal everything from you. It's a jury duty scam. Now, I think I heard about this a month or so ago, but now it's making its way around the Internet. It says, please pass this on to everyone in your email address book. It is spreading fast, so be prepared should you get this call. Most of us take those summonses for jury duty seriously, but not enough people skip out on their civic duty. But enough people skip out on their civic duty that a new and ominous kind of fraud has surfaced. You'll get a call. The caller claims to be a jury coordinator. If you protest that you've never received a summons for jury duty, the thug asks you for your Social Security number and date of birth so he or she can verify the information and cancel the arrest warrant that's been issued for you. Now, if you give out any of this information, bingo, your identity was just stolen. So if you get one of these phone calls, tell them to go F themselves and hang up, and then immediately call your county clerk of courts and say, hey, did somebody send me a jury duty notice because I've gotten nothing? But don't fall for this. These filthy pigs, see, this is where I fall down on my strict adherence to being anti-death penalty. Anything that people do to hurt children and anything that people do like this, take them out behind the barn and put a goddamn bullet in the back of their head. They'll never do it again. End of story, right? All my liberal friends out there went, "No, Mike, don't say that!" Okay, I don't really mean it, but you understand what I'm saying. These people are scum. The fraud so far has been reported in 11 states, including Oklahoma, Illinois, and Colorado, and there's more. It's particularly insidious because they use intimidation over the phone to try to bully people into giving information by pretending you're with the court system and talking about a warrant for your arrest. So anyway, if you get a call like that, if you want more information, go to FBI.gov and type in jury scams, and you'll find it. Oh, man, it must be Republicans running that. Republicans from Nigeria or something. I don't know. According to sources familiar with the case, this is according to New Yorker Online, the Obama Justice Department has indicted Ali Salah Kala Almari, who is the alleged Al-Qaeda sleeper agent, the one who is the only so-called illegal enemy combatant that's been imprisoned inside the United States. Now, this is good. It's not bad. This is good. The Bush crime family has held this man for the past 5 years in indefinite detention at the U.S. Naval Brig in Charleston, South Carolina. Despite never having stood trial or been convicted of any crime, he's been locked down for 5 years, most of which was in solitary confinement. Now, the last guy they did this to was Padilla, was it Jose Padilla, who eventually then, according to his lawyer, became so emotionally disturbed he can't mount a successful defense against any crime or any charge of a crime against him. This is how the Bush crime family operates. This is how tyrants operate throughout the history of the human race. So the sons of bitches in the Bush crime family kept this guy locked down for 5 years. No charges brought, nothing, never stood trial, nothing. Now, according to sources close to the case, this is what New Yorker is reporting. A federal grand jury is meeting today in Peoria, Illinois, and may indict this guy on multiple terrorism charges, including providing material support for terrorism. A spokesman for the Justice Department declined to comment, as did Almari's lawyers. Now, I know you're way ahead of me here. An indictment would signal a major shift in legal policy away from the Bush years. In the Bush years, the Nixon statement, "If the president does it, it's not illegal," held in so many different instances, including the destruction of most of the salient points of the U.S. Constitution. They were just thrown in the garbage, as Bush called it, the goddamn piece of paper. The decision by President Obama to restore traditional American legal practices by treating terror suspects as common criminals, which is what Clinton did. That's why the people who made the original attack on the U.S. Trade Center back in 93 are in prison in the United States and will be there for the rest of their lives. They were captured, indicted, brought to trial, found guilty, and sentenced, which is the way it's supposed to be if we still believe in the Constitution. The Bush crime family never did. The Obama presidency does. So Almari probably will be indicted, and then it will be up to our legal system to either prove him guilty or he will remain innocent, as the Constitution guarantees, innocent until proven guilty. That's the way it works here. That's not the way it works in the Soviet Union, in China, in any totalitarian state. That's not the way it works. Oh, those countries and the Bush crime family. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Now back to this grand jury that is seated in Peoria, Illinois, to hear evidence presented by federal prosecutors regarding Ali Salah Kala Al-Mari, the alleged Al-Qaeda sleeper agent, who has been the only so-called illegal enemy combatant in prison inside the United States. The federal grand jury in Peoria meets only once a month. So today, Thursday, was likely the last chance to indict Al-Mari before the Supreme Court's deadline. You see, the Supreme Court agreed to hear this case in the spring, which required the Obama administration to file papers stating its position by March 23rd. Now, an indictment, if this grand jury returns an indictment that would transfer Al-Mari from military detention into the criminal justice system, which hopes will render one hopes, if one believes in constitutional law, that would render the Supreme Court case moot. Now, as a postscript to all this, human rights groups and civil liberties lawyers, according to New Yorker Online, are watching the situation closely as an indicator of whether the Obama administration will support the Bush administration's aggressive claims to executive detention powers in the war on terror, or whether or not the Obama administration is going to return to the rule of law, not the rule of a psychopath in the White House. And I'm not referring necessarily to Bush. Bush was just a crazy man. But Dick Cheney, a complete psychopath who took great pleasure, along with some of his sick cohorts, in locking people up and torturing people for the sheer hell of it. You know why they did it? For the same reason a dog will lick between his own legs. Because he can. That's the reason Dick Cheney did what he did. He's like a dog. So the word out there as this news makes its rounds, it gives the first impression that somehow the Obama administration is doing something. Uh-oh, they're going to be just like Bush. No, au contraire, they're being just the opposite of Bush, the Bush crime family. So it's kind of good news. Now, where it concerns good news about the Obama administration, stick around. Coming up after the next break, we're going to have a moment with Bob. And Bob has put together some things that are not good news about the Obama administration. And I'm not laughing because what Bob has put together is lighthearted or frivolous or funny, but because it's deadly serious and I'm getting to the point where I don't know whether to laugh, scream, cry, or just sit around and pick my nose anymore. But in the meantime, a group, see, this is, here you go, here's capitalism. A group of rich Americans is suing the private bank, UBS, to keep their names secret, the Americans, to keep the names secret in this tax case. It was sued on Tuesday in a Swiss federal court by wealthy American clients seeking to prevent the disclosure of their identities as part of a tax evasion investigation by the United States Justice Department. Now, this investigation was started during the Bush administration. The lawsuit accuses UBS and Switzerland's financial regulator of violating Swiss bank secrecy laws, of conducting what Swiss law considers illegal activities with foreign authorities. That means complying with requests or indictments or inquiries from foreign legal officials saying, hey, we want to know just how much of a scam, how much illegal activity is going on with this bastard who has what he or she thinks is a private account nobody can reach in your bank. Now, remember Phil Graham, the turtle from Texas, who was in the Senate for a long time. This rat bastard sits on the board of UBS. Just keep that in mind. UBS has been running what amounts to a reverse Robin Hood. They steal, their depositors steal from common people to enrich themselves and then deposit it in hidden accounts. The lawsuit against UBS that tries to keep this information quiet filed on behalf of nearly a dozen American clients. The ultra-wealthy, I wouldn't be surprised if some of those 12 names would include names that you and I are familiar with. But it underscores this clash between Swiss banking laws, secrecy laws, and the laws of the United States. See, tax evasion is not considered a crime in Switzerland. It's just not considered a crime. Why should it be? UBS is the world's largest private bank, and Switzerland is the world's largest offshore tax haven with trillions of dollars in assets. Now, when billions were stolen out of Iraq by members of the Bush crime family, members of KBR, executives with Halliburton, whoever stole it, when that money was stolen, it immediately went to accounts like those at UBS. Numbered accounts run by people who urinate all over our soldiers, the dead ones, the live ones, and the wounded ones, urinate all over the Constitution, who don't care. They want the money. They got the money. These are the people who are suing to keep their identities quiet. You know why? Because they're probably afraid if their identities were made public, there would be a lynching party.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. We'll try to get this tonight about Obama's budget. But two headlines about the same story. And it's amazing, isn't it? New York Times, Obama plans major shifts in spending. All right. Washington Post, Obama's budget proposal would push deficit to $1.75 trillion. Which do you think represents impartial journalism? All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time once again for A Moment with Bob. Try as we might, the moments with Bob keep coming across the transom. We can't stop them. This is the latest episode, entitled The Professor, the Politician, and the President. Hey, Mike. Professor Barack Obama taught constitutional law at the University of Chicago Law School for 12 years. Senator Barack Obama, in February 2008, voted against retroactive telecom immunity when asked whether he supported, quote, giving phone companies retroactive immunity for any illicit cooperation with intelligence agencies or law enforcement. He answered, quote, no, I strongly oppose retroactive immunity in the FISA bill. No one should get a free pass to violate the basic civil liberties of the American people, not the President of the United States and not the telecommunications companies that fell in line with his warrantless surveillance program. That is why I am proud to stand with Senator Dodd and a grassroots movement of Americans who are standing up for our civil liberties and the rule of law. End quote. Senator Barack Obama, in July 2008, 5 months later, voted for retroactive immunity for the telecoms, saying the legislation, quote, met my basic concerns, end quote. President Barack Obama's Justice Department continues to stand behind a Bush-era law meant to prevent lawsuits against telecommunications companies accused of illegally sharing private customer information with intelligence agencies. From rawstory.com, quote, electronic communications service providers play an important role in assisting intelligence officials in national security activities. Indeed, the intelligence community cannot obtain the intelligence it needs without assistance from these companies. That's according to a Barack Obama administration 18-page brief. It goes on, quote, "The committee was concerned that without retroactive immunity, the private sector might be unwilling to cooperate with lawful government requests in the future without unnecessary court involvement and protracted litigation," end quote. It continues, quote, "The possible reduction in intelligence that might result from this delay is simply unacceptable for the safety of our nation," end quote, directly citing the 2008 findings of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence report. "It's too bad we can't retroactively get Professor Barack Obama's views about illegal wiretapping, or ask Professor Obama about Nixon's statement, quote, when the president does it, that means it's not illegal," end quote. And Cheney's response when Chris Wallace asked him, "If the president during the war decides to do something to protect the country, is it legal?" And Cheney replied, "I think as a general proposition, I'd say yes," end quote. What would Professor Obama say? What would Professor Obama say to President Obama? A few days ago, I and millions of Americans rejoiced in the fact that we now had a president who could talk, not only coherently, but inspirationally, to a joint session of Congress for almost an hour, an event unheard of over the last 8 years. We have been inured to the gaffes, malaprops, and flat-out gibberish force-fed us by the Bush regime. So, we feel an almost overwhelming sense of relief when we see that our president can talk. But shouldn't we also be feeling the nagging tug of growing alarm that the bedrock crimes of the Bush regime are still part of how the United States does its business? From a strange but interesting blog site, Welcome to Everything, quote, "When the Nazis were in power, they passed laws that retroactively legalized the crimes they had committed on the path to power, and they covered everything they did while they were there. They were unusually concerned with inventing a whole new concept of justice and jurisprudence, and overeager intellectuals were happy to oblige. Yet the essential fact of Nazi law was that Hitler, as the embodiment of the German people, could do no wrong. Everything that the Führer did was legal by definition," end quote. Yeah, the Nazi analogy grows tiresome. Crematoria don't dot our countryside. Jackbooted thugs aren't stomping down the streets beating liberals like a gong whenever they find them. Citizens aren't snatched from their lives and sent off on secret places to God knows where. Well, yeah, okay, we still do that last one. But one out of three ain't bad, or one out of five, because there's this from antiwar.com. U.S. combat missions in Iraq will continue after, quote, pullout, end quote. Obama pledge to withdraw combat troops won't end combat by the troops. Just one day after reports came out regarding the Obama administration's 19-month withdrawal plan from Iraq, the Pentagon was detailing the enormous number of troops that would remain on the ground after Obama ostensibly fulfills his promise to remove all combat troops and all the combat they'll be engaging in. After the, quote, pullout, end quote, as many as 50,000 troops will remain on the ground, and despite being touted as a withdrawal of combat troops, Pentagon spokesman Jeff Morrell conceded that some would continue to, quote, conduct combat operations, end quote, and Iraq would still be considered a war zone. The rest of the soldiers would be what he describes as enablers. President Obama promised a 16-month pullout from Iraq during the campaign, but backed off the promise under pressure from the military. Since then, he has spoken of a responsible military drawdown. But even as he is set to officially unveil this new plan, the question of when the troops will actually be out of Iraq entirely seems like it will remain unanswered. And finally, what about this? Afghanistan. From Bloomberg.com. Obama rushed a decision to send another 17,000 U.S. troops on top of the 38,000 U.S. soldiers now on the ground there, ahead of a comprehensive policy review due in April. This review is expected to call for even more troops. So, Bob writes, the wars continue. The wiretapping and renditions continue. No one has scotch-taped the Constitution back together and the dead piled up like cordwood. How much more time are we supposed to give Obama? It's only been a month. Three more months? Six? Are we supposed to wait a year? How much longer are we supposed to, patiently await the moment when our leader unequivocally states that the killing is over and our Constitution is restored? Why do we think that we have to wait? Why do we think that we have to wait one more minute? I have a sign. I've had it for years. It says, "End the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Bring our troops home now." Not 19 months from now. Not thousands of deaths from now. Not billions of dollars from now. Now. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Oh, and I got a second email from him today, and he writes, "Hey, remember Charlotte Dennett? She ran for Attorney General in Vermont last fall, and she just had her website revamped. She has put together something called How to Prosecute a President: Frequently Asked Questions. It's a good read. I've linked to it from prosecutegeorgebush.com so people can read something interesting before they call their district attorney. So check it out. Go to prosecutegeorgebush.com and get the link to Charlotte Dennett's website. And I went there this afternoon after I got this. It's very interesting reading. Answers to the facts, the facts. Faqua. How do you pronounce F-A-Q? Faqua. Faqua. The answers to the frequently asked questions that now appear at Charlotte Dennett's website. So check it out. Go to prosecutegeorgebush.com. And once you get there, you're probably going to want to stay for about an hour or so because it is an astonishing website. But eventually, go to the Charlotte Dennett website and you will find answers to frequently asked questions. John Bolton makes a joke at the CPAC convention today about nuking Chicago. And my, wait till you hear the reaction of this right-wing audience.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. As you know, this this event is occurring in D.C. With all these Republicans. you can go to the CPAC.org, I think that's the website, and take a look at the swine that are attending this thing. It's pretty incredible. Go down their guest list. Wow. But anyway, one of the speechifiers today was John Bolton, who was former UN ambassador. Even I mentioned this in my hate-filled mini-blog today. But keep in mind, John Bolton was never confirmed by the Senate. He was recess-appointed. The Senate would never have approved, I don't think, the appointment of this rat bastard. He's a holdover from the Vietnam slaughter and also from the Central American slaughter. This is one of those PNAC people who, if there is a hell, he will be shoveling coal for all eternity. But anyway, he spoke today to this Conservative Political Action Conference, and he tried to do what he spent eight years doing, well, more than that, and that is jacking up the fear quotient, not just in the room, but also across the country, because, you know, our mainstream media is going to report on this filthy event. But he brought up the prospect of an Iranian nuclear attack on an American city. Now, listen to what he says, and then listen to the audience reaction. These are, you know, I often talk about the Republican Party needs to be murdered. I'm serious. I am absolutely serious. Listen to these Republicans. Listen how they react to Bolton's statement about an attack on an American city.
The fact is, on foreign policy, I don't think President Obama thinks it's a priority. He said during the campaign he thought Iran was a tiny threat. Tiny, depending on how many nuclear weapons they're ultimately able to deliver on target. It's tiny compared to the Soviet Union, but is the loss of one American city, pick one at random, Chicago, is that a tiny threat?
Ha, 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 Chicago, nuclear attack on Chicago, ha, 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 ha. God damn, John, that is funny. Isn't that where the Negro is from? Yeah, it is, ha, 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 ha. Listen to these pigs. Laughter. Even Bolton, if you look at the video, which I believe is at, where is it, Think Progress, even Bolton is saying it from a standpoint of trying to inject fear. He's got a very sour, serious look on his face, like he always does. The audience, these freaks who are at the CPAC convention, laugh at the image of a nuclear attack on Chicago. Jesus Christ! And you people wonder why I say the things I do about Republicans and conservatives? Please. Please! Laughter. Laughter about an attack. A nuclear attack. You know, bombs on Chicago. Play it again. Play it one more time, Kathy. I want people to hear this, and go find this video.
The fact is, on foreign policy, I don't think President Obama thinks it's a priority. He said during the campaign he thought Iran was a tiny threat. Tiny, depending on how many nuclear weapons they're ultimately able to deliver on target. It's tiny compared to the Soviet Union, but is the loss of one American city, pick one at random, Chicago, is that a tiny threat?
Listen to the applause and laughter. Listen. These sick sons of bitches. Cheers and laughter and applause at the idea of Obama's hometown being obliterated by a nuclear weapon. Well, you people out there who continue to vote Republican for Rush Limbaugh and Piyush Jindal and Joe the Plumber and the hoe from Wasilla and John Boner, and a bunch of your finest who gather at this meeting, this disgusting group in D.C. and laugh and cheer about the idea of bombing with a nuclear weapon the city of Chicago. Shame on you. Shame on you, Republicans. Shame on you. You really are scum. You really are. This country would be so much better off if the Republican Party were to disappear. Let the Democratic Party become the Republican, become the Conservative Party, because it is already. Just murder the Republican Party. Flush it down the commode with the rest of the human waste. Get rid of it. The Democrats are certainly capable of being a true conservative party. They are that now. And then liberals can begin forming the liberal party in America. Then we would have the Conservative Democratic Party and the Liberal Democratic Party. Maybe we could call the Conservative Democratic Party the Christian Democrats, like they do in Europe. And the Liberal Democrats would be the Liberal Democrats. So you have the Christian Democrats, the Liberal Democrats, and then maybe something could be done to restore the honor and dignity, not to mention the survivability of this country. But as long as we have a party in this country that sends these thugs to D.C. to laugh and applaud about the nuclear annihilation of Chicago, you filthy pigs. Welcome back. 6 and a half past the hour. This is the Molloy Program on Second Thought Radio Network. Oh, and by the way, Reg sent me in what Barack Obama really said. John Bolton, like every right winger, you know, I've said it before, everything that comes out of a right winger's mouth is a lie. Every conservative, as soon as he opens his mouth or she opens her mouth regarding anything political and most anything about anything, it's a lie. It's a goddamn lie from the get-go. When Bolton said today that Obama said Iran was a tiny threat, that's not what he said at all. Here's what he said. Quote, strong countries, this is what Obama said. Quote, strong countries and strong presidents talk to their adversaries. That's what Kennedy did with Khrushchev. That's what Reagan did with Gorbachev. That's what Nixon did with Mao. I mean, think about it. Iran, Cuba, Venezuela, these countries are tiny compared to the Soviet Union. End quote. I remember the speech. And if you plug into your Wayback Machine, it wasn't that long ago, it was last year, sometime during the campaign, when he said that. But John Bolton and every single Republican is a filthy pig liar, an absolute liar. They want to see Barack Obama fail. I mean, they're banking their political careers, their pocketbooks, everything on the failure. You know what? Obama is going to kick them in the face and make them say, yes, sir, thank you, may I have more. Yes, he is. Now, you want to hear another Rush Limbaugh lie? Remember, I guess it started a few months ago when Limbaugh started jacking up his crazed psychopathic listeners who just don't have a chance anymore. You know, Limbaugh just beats them over the head with all of his own personal psychotic BS. Limbaugh is a wreck, is an absolute train wreck. So he does this 24/7 across the fruited plain. And the lie du jour a few months ago was about the fairness doctrine. Yeah, well, you know, they're going to try to, the Democrats are going to try, now that they control the Senate and the House, are going to try to pass a reinstitute the fairness doctrine. You know what that'll do?
That'll end right-wing talk radio, which is what they want to do, ladies and gentlemen. That's all they're interested in, is killing right-wing talk radio. Conservative, not right-wing. Did I say right-wing? No, that's what Malloy says. Conservative talk radio. They want to kill it. Because they know that we have all the answers. They want to kill it.
Remember, he went on and on. And then the other pigs in conservative talk, right-wing talk, picked it up. Like Hannity and the Hewitt and, the rest of these pissants that infest talk radio, right-wing talk radio. They all picked up, yeah, they want to reinstitute the fairness doctrine. Oh, my God. Well, the Senate, I believe it was today, voted to ban the reinstatement of the fairness doctrine. The amendment sponsored by Senator Jim DeMint, Republican of South Carolina. This was added, two amendments added to the D.C. House Voting Rights Act. Two amendments. Now, this regulation was taken off the books way back in 1987. But Limbaugh, being the huge pile of stinking waste that he is, follows the Republican playbook, or writes the Republican playbook, use fear. I don't care what it is. Scare the hell out of them. They're a bunch of dumbasses anyway. So just keep larding on the fear. The fear of the fairness doctrine. The amendment today was sponsored by Jim DeMint, would not only ban the fairness doctrine, but it will also prohibit the FCC from encouraging broadcasters to air local news and information, children's programming, and public safety alerts. Ah! No more children's programming for you! No more public safety alerts for you! Now, an amendment offered by Richard Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, refocuses the DeMint Amendment on the narrow issue of the Fairness Doctrine ban. You see, this is what Republicans do. Are you a conservative Republican, jacklegs? Do you consider yourself a Republican and you have children? Do your children watch PBS Kids? Do they watch Sesame Street, anything? Or are you convinced that the characters on Sesame Street are queer, so you keep your kids away? I mean, think about it. No children's programming. And no local news and information. That's what Senator Jim DeMint, Republican of South Carolina, that's what he tried to stick into this, and kill the fairness doctrine. Well, I told you a couple of months ago, there's not a liberal on earth. Well, okay. There's not a liberal in American broadcasting who wants a goddamn thing to do with the fairness doctrine. It's a joke. Who wants? Think about it. In the age of creeping fascism in this country, who wants a government agency to decide what has to be put on the air in terms of a political point of view? The Fairness Doctrine would have required that every time I tell you the truth about Republicans, I would probably have to tell you a lie about Republicans. When I call them scum, murderers, defilers of the Constitution, haters of America, I'd have to come back later and say, well, some Democrats are scum, defilers, and blah, 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 blah. So anybody with a sense of a rhubarb stalk would understand that the Fairness Doctrine is not that. And as I told you before, the original idea of the Fairness Doctrine had to do with three television networks. It had nothing to do with radio.
But you see, Rush Limbaugh, getting behind the golden IEB microphone, decided last year, well, I need something to jack these mules up a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So I think I'll scare the hell out of them, make them think I am going to be removed from the airwaves. Me, Rush Limbaugh, the head of the Republican Party, God's own representative on earth, that I will be removed.
Anyway, the next time you hear some half-witted Republican or conservative say, well, you know they're going to try to reinstitute the fairness doctrine, Tell him that an amendment to a different bill was passed today that makes that impossible now. And tell them to stop mouth breathing and maybe try to reclaim their mind. I think Janine Garofalo was on Oberman's program tonight. And that's usually rebroadcast here in the East. Matter of fact, I think it's being rebroadcast right now. You should watch her segment. God, I miss Janine. She certainly has tattooed up her body, hasn't she? But, you know, she's on 24. And she made some very salient points about people who listen to Rush are as disturbed as Limbaugh and have become sufferers of the so-called Stockholm Syndrome, where you are infused with some kind of a sick identification with your oppressor, which is all Limbaugh is. He is a coward. He's a fearmonger. He has his own deeply embedded psychological problems that he spews off on the air every single day. And his listeners are people who suffer from the Stockholm Syndrome. There are people who are willing to identify with their oppressor, hoping that somehow that identification will save their asses from the very thing the oppressor is pumping down their throats, or in this case, into their ears. It's amazing. Amazing. The depth of the ignorance of people who listen to Limbaugh. Oh, Rush, please, what do I do? Tell me what to say. Help me, Rush. Help me, Rush, please.
Taking on the world, junked out boyfriend, and you making a statement while all your friends are making it through school.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. This comes from CJ, who writes, Mike, over the past several years, this is regarding Obama's economic plan. Over the past several years, the Bush administration basically did whatever it pleased in the name of the war on terror. When people objected to various Bush policies, those people were often accused of being anti-American. I have an idea. Why doesn't Obama simply say, hey, we're in a global war against terror, so-called. We have to do things we wouldn't normally do. We are America, and we are the holy and the pure. As President Bush told us all, it is important that we keep our economy strong so as not to lose ground against the terrorists. Thus, in fighting against terror, those Americans who have big money are going to have to pitch in more than they did before. Of course, we know that they are willing to do this because they are patriotic and refuse to object to doing their part would not only be selfish, but also unpatriotic in aiding the enemy and destroying the American economy. What do you think, Mike? Let the flag waving F's suck on that one. Wealthy right wingers and wealthy right wing wannabes, or right wing wannabes who want to be wealthy and never will because they, like their liberal or democratic counterparts, are part of the grand plan to keep them forever enslaved. Again, that's part of Russia's function. Is to provide protection. He runs a protection racket for corporate America and for the wealthy in America. There are Republicans, working class or middle class Republicans out there who still think that they can grab the brass ring. That's what Russia's job is. That's what corporate America's job is.
Well, hang in there. Eventually you'll be, famous like we are. But
the ruling class makes it very clear. Fighting this nation's wars, taking care of this nation's ugly business, whether it is cleaning out the sewers or making sure bridges don't collapse or educating these little curtain climbers that all of you poor people seem to have. That is not our business. That's the business of you lesser folks. We wealthy people don't deal with this kind of stuff. We just don't. So go away. As a matter of fact, what we're trying to do is to get our effective tax rate down below 5% and then to zero. Why should we pay taxes? We're rich. You useless bastards down there in the gutters, in the working class, in the middle class, you're not rich. Get out of here. We have fed you this dream, this mythology over and over again that, yes, you too can become the next Bill Gates. And you dumbasses, bought it. But that's why the whole game plan of the Republicans is to keep what they have and take what you have. And by you, I mean even working class Republicans. The wealthy in this country, this country has become so defined by class. You know it as well as I do. And class, in turn, is defined by how much money you're able to steal. And if you can steal it, like the people that get the huge bonuses on Wall Street for selling debt, for convincing other people to invest in debt. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. But the classes in this country are divided clearly, not by birth, not by the way you talk, and not any longer necessarily by the color of your skin. Certainly not your nativist or immigrant status. It's determined by how much Jack you have, Jack and Jill. If you got money, honey, you're in. You're in! How many people still have money or have money? But the idea is to convince the bobbleheads, to convince the working class Republicans who still have not come out of the ether after 8 years of seeing their entire lives and the lives of their children and grandchildren, some of them literally destroyed in Bush's wars, seeing all of this destroyed. There was, excuse me, still 50 plus million who voted for these people. Again, that's how bad it is in these United States of America. Republicans, in addition to suffering from Stockholm syndrome, are also apparently just full-blown masochists. What is wrong with you people? What is wrong with you? Do you think Limbaugh or Coulter or any of these people have the least interest in you or your life? Do you really? Oh, my God. But I guess some of you do. That's what Stockholm syndrome is, to identify and sympathize with. And that's the weird part. Your oppressor, Rush Limbaugh, who signed a $250 million contract a couple of years ago. And he tries to pass himself off as a friend of the middle class or working class Republican? Oh, Jesus Christ. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Memories.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more Mike Malloy.
I am slowly working my way to some of the details in Obama's $3.5 trillion budget for the coming fiscal year. I hate budgets, don't you? But there is a clear change in direction in this country in this budget. Regardless of what you or I think about Obama's positions regarding national security, with quotes around it there, because I honestly don't believe the United States can be threatened by anybody, but because of our nukes, that's all, because we have nuclear weapons. And supposedly we have this massive spying agency, several of them. I mean, regardless of what we think about Obama in that regard, with this budget, he has laid out an agenda that is a 180 from how this country's been drifting. Now, I hear all day long, I heard these constipated Republicans just turning red about this. You know what I'm saying? Just, you can see their cheeks puff up. In the case of the minority whip in the House, John Boehner, who normally, this guy must spend an awful lot of time in tanning booths, but you could see his cheeks puff out just like little chipmunk. He's just so pissed off. Kay Bailey Hutchinson, who either is absolutely ignorant or understands the brain dead level of her constituents, also got out there today. The list goes on and on, just on and on, of Republicans who don't understand or refuse to accept or want to lie to their constituents that the reason this budget is so huge is because it represents, oh, I don't know, about 25 years of so-called deferred maintenance. That included the Clinton years, yeah. Deferred maintenance. And if you own a house, if you bought a house and you got a pretty good deal on it, and all of a sudden you realize what the deferred maintenance consists of. Well, you need a new roof. Well, the plumbing's gone to hell. Well, you need wiring. Well, you got to put in hardwood floors. Well, you know, the kitchen cabinets are gone. Well, you know, just on and on. Well, it needs landscaping. Well, all those two before somebody put in the garden have become nothing but termite attractors. And it just goes on and on and on. That's deferred maintenance. And we have it in this country, monumentally so, because we in this country have been on a spending, no saving, gimme, gimme credit binge for the past two decades. Just out of control, out of control. God damn. I mean, is there any doubt we brought this on ourselves? Why? Because we are crazy? That's part of it. But also because this is a consumer society. A lot of Republicans don't even refer to us as human beings anymore. We're not voters. We're not people. We're consumers. Consume. Do you know what consume means? To use up to the point where it's destroyed. Then you have to buy more. So we went on this 25-year binge. And the Republicans, of course, wanting to plow this country into debt. Don't forget that Reagan collected, you know, this is what cracks me up. I mean, it just goes on and on. Reagan put this country deeper in debt in terms of the national debt than all presidents from Washington up to Carter combined. That's what Reagan gave us. And Pappy Bush added to it. Clinton made a slight dent in it and then unleashed the system, unleashed this unconscionable bastard George W. That's why we're in debt. So the Republicans, of course, who are parochial, they're stupid, they can only see about 2 inches in front of their faces, and now they're screaming. Oh, look at all the spending, debt, tax hikes. Oh, my God. They're going to bankrupt small business. This is the same thing that was said in 1993 when Clinton passed his budget, got his budget proposals passed with the Democratic House and Senate, and which loaded taxes on people who could afford it, and who didn't hurt at all, and their incomes went up! During the 8 years of Clinton, the rich got richer. The middle class made a few bucks, and the poor got richer. But the Republicans, you see, that's what brought Gingrich and his Contract on America posse into office in 1994.
Oh, this budget's going to destroy us!
No, it didn't.
The tax hikes are going to destroy us!
No, NAFTA destroyed us, thanks to Bush 1 and Clinton. Other things destroyed us, thanks to, in 1996, the end of the Glass-Steagall Act, thanks to Phil Graham and some other dumb smart bastards who decided to play the American public like a huge casino, which they absolutely did. But it had nothing to do, you see, the disaster with the Clinton tax hikes. As a matter of fact, the Clinton tax hikes brought in the revenue necessary to keep the government solvent while the players, the Republicans, the conservatives, went out and raped and pillaged everything they could get their goddamn hands on. And now they're complaining because Obama has decided to tax the wealthy who never pay any part of the freight of running this country. Never, never. So now they're going to have to pay a minimal amount, and they're whining and pissing their pants and screaming and yelling and acting like a bunch of thumb-sucking babies. Right? Kay Bailey Hutchinson's Bizarro World. Here it is. She said, quote, "Every major tax cut in history has created more revenue," which is simply 100% wrong. Dr. D, who sent this to me, is this from Think Progress? Maybe it is. I don't know. Anyway, here's what it says. In the budget released today, the Obama administration announced that it would end the Bush tax cuts on the wealthiest Americans, as well as shut off loopholes that effectively eviscerate corporate tax revenues, all in an effort to fuel a robust domestic agenda and start lowering the deficit. That's what this is all about, truth seekers. Predictably, the right wing is up in arms over the small tax increase for the richest businesses and families. Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson, Republican of Texas, complained to a friendly crowd at CNBC this morning that Obama's tax increases will harm the economy and insisted the best way to raise revenue is to cut taxes. How does that work, Kay? Here's what she said, quote, "I think we get revenue the way we've done it in the past. It has been so successful, and that is through tax cuts. Every major tax cut we've had in history has created more revenue." Every major tax cut we've had in history has created more revenue. Now, the notion, that's the end of her quote, the notion that cutting taxes somehow magically increases government revenue is a myth that simply won't die. And that's where Limbaugh comes in and the other right-wing lying bastards on talk radio. This is why they're paid the big bucks, to keep people involved in the Stockholm Syndrome. Don't open your eyes. How many times has Limbaugh said, "Don't read the paper, don't watch television, just listen to me. I'll tell you what to think." But the claim that tax cuts pay for themselves is contradicted by, oh, the historical record. That's according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, which showed today that revenues grew twice as fast in the 1990s when taxes were raised than in the 1980s when taxes were cut. Let me repeat that. Government revenues grew twice as fast in the 1990s when taxes were raised than in the 1980s when taxes were cut. FactCheck.org called a claim like Hutchinson's, quote, "highly misleading," unquote, and stated the obvious fact that, quote, "we can't have both lower taxes and fatter government coffers," end quote. It can't be done. But you see, Republicans, well, you know, Paul Krugman wrote, noting that government revenues climbed steadily through the Clinton administration, then plunged dramatically following the 2001 Bush tax cuts. Krugman wrote, "Everything you've heard about how revenues have boomed since the Bush tax cuts is wrong." Of course, what does he know? He's a Nobel Prize winner. Oh, what does he know? Falling revenues during tax-cutting Republican administrations means 3, 2, 1. Growing debt. Hutchinson, you see, is not, as suggested here, looking at a different history than everybody else. Hutchinson willingly swallowed, which one, the blue pill. She doesn't give a goddamn about reality any more than any Republican does. Republicans are not about reality. They're about spooky mythology. They're about things that go bump in the night. They're about the liberals who are coming to steal and eat their firstborn. Republicans are sick. Being a Republican should be classified as a mental illness. I think it is classified in the DSM-4 or in the DSM-5 that will soon come out. If you are conservative, you are suffering from a mental illness. You have a brain injury or something, but you are suffering from a mental illness. During that NBC interview, Kay Bailey Hutchinson was asked, if it's necessary to postpone our nation's answer to health care because it costs too much, should we do that? And she responded, yes.
And I'm telling pre-September, I lean on in the loop to help them unremember. I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is wrong. Democrats strike without warning, so to your back seat in bed. Wear a bucket on your head, that's what I said. And to show your support for right-wing ideology, the raids on Iraq and the rape...
Uh-oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Keep a bucket on your head.
10 before the hour. All right, let's do some phone calls. All right, let's go to Jonathan, excuse me, in Defiance, Ohio, who is listening on Sirius and wants to tell me I'm wrong about taxes. Okay, Jonathan, go ahead. Jonathan.
Hello.
Jonathan, you have to speak up. Don't speak up. You know, like that. You want to tell me you're wrong about taxes, or I'm wrong about taxes. Go ahead, tell me.
Yes, because I just, about 2 weeks ago, I pulled it up on the website talking about the tax rate, and you're completely wrong about that. It shows whenever Clinton's years, how little taxes they brought in compared to what Bush's tax cuts did.
What was the website you went to, Jonathan?
The government's own website. I wish I could tell you exactly what it was.
Well, you're going to have to do better than that, because the government's own website shows nothing of the sort.
Wrong. Hold on. If I think about it, too, I've been here trying to think about it. But
yeah.
I wish I could. I really.
Yeah, I know. It always works out that way. They're just some mystery websites out there, right?
No. This is a government's own website.
Government mystery website that will tell you absolute lies. It's amazing. When tax rates went up, revenue goes up. When tax rates go down, revenue goes down. How do you think? Let me ask you something, Jonathan. Now try real hard to answer me here, okay? When Clinton raised taxes, at the beginning of the decade of the 90s.
Yes.
And then when he left office, did he give George Bush a budget surplus or a budget deficit?
He didn't give him anything other than what
okay.
he already had.
Goodbye, Jonathan. Goodbye. Have a nice time in Defiance, Ohio. Goodbye. Adios. See what I mean? It's pointless. I put these people on, and I mean, even Limburger will tell you, because it's a matter of historical fact. Christ, why bother? When Bush stole the election in 2000 and assumed control of this country, he was given a budget surplus for the first time. I mean, it was, honest to God, Jonathan, it was all over the news. Of course, you don't listen to the news. You listen to right-wing drivel, and you pull up mysterious ghost government websites. It was all over the place. Clinton handed Bush a budget surplus and a reduction in the national debt. Do you know the difference between the two, Jonathan? Bush immediately lowered taxes, and Jonathan, look where we are now. Oh, my God, Jonathan. Not only has Limbaugh stuck a straw up your nose and sucked out your brains, not only has he done that, but, my man, if you run your household budget or fill up your gas tank or buy groceries based on that kind of thinking, you probably don't have too much longer to before you're homeless, carless, and wondering what the hell happened. It's that kind of ignorance, truth seekers, that just never, ever, ever fails to freak me out, because it's willful ignorance. It is Limbaugh ignorance. It is right-wing talk radio ignorance. It is Republican ignorance. It is the Stockholm Syndrome. Oh, my God. Rob is calling from Mount Iron, Minnesota, listening on Sirius. Rob, welcome to the program.
Like, you know, you ought to play with those guys a little bit longer.
I can't. I can't. I can't do it because I ask them a question and get back rat garbage. I can't do it.
I hear it out there on the highway all the time. I'm crossing the highways, and
yeah.
I'm a truck driver, and the whole thing is we're I ask these guys out there when they tell me the things that they're thinking. And I says, would you quit parroting Hannity and Limbaugh, you know?
Yeah.
Would you come up with an original idea, you know?
Right.
You know, you're so original. I mean, I'm staying up late tonight just to be able to listen to you. Let me tell you, you energize me really well, you know?
Well, when you ask people out on the highway to come up with an original idea, what do you get back?
They basically just start stuttering. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, come on back. The one guy, he came back the one time, tell me one thing Obama didn't. I says, he was a community organizer. He says, well, what does that mean? I says, would you like to go into a black neighborhood and be able to find out what the people are actually thinking?
No, he wouldn't. But rather than that, next time you get one of those doofuses on your talkback, why don't you just say to him, what did George Bush do before he was appointed president? Bush's entire life is a series of failures, out of which he was bailed by his family and the Saudis and the Bin Laden family.
Yeah, that goes back a really long time before this even, Mike. You know, the tax cut thing. It's where I try to be able to get it out there, and I hope you can give me about 30 seconds here. It's where Reagan cut taxes back in the early 80s, right?
Right.
Now, the whole thing is where then he turned around and he raised the Social Security taxes so that the baby boom generation could pay for their retirement, right?
Okay.
Now, the next thing is where what happened to all of that money? Excuse me, do you know where I'm going for?
Yeah.
$5 trillion by 2017, all of that money is gone, and we were supposed to pay. Baby boom was supposed to be able to pay for our own retirement.
Yeah.
And guess what? Now it's going to come down to where the righties are coming back at us and saying, guess what? We have to be able to take and pass this debt on to our children.
Well, there's something else to do, and thanks, Rob, for checking in. There's something else to do, and that is to murder the Republican Party and then say to anybody who wants to call themselves a Republican or a conservative, get out of my way.
truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Yeah, welcome back. We have a little less than another hour of fun and frivolity here. I think I'm going to wait on the going through the Obama budget until tomorrow. A couple of decisions here from the Bush administration. The Justice Department will stop medical marijuana raids, according to the Attorney General. This occurred yesterday, and yes, as reported Raw Story, a little noticed remark yesterday, Obama Attorney General Eric Holder said that the Justice Department no longer will raid medical marijuana dispensaries established under state laws, but technically prohibited by the federal government. And, of course, this marks a dramatic shift from the sick bastards in the Bush administration, whose approach to all this was hunting down those who sought to dispense marijuana for medical purposes. And frankly, whether it's used for medical purposes or not really is kind of beside the point. If people show up in California or wherever with a prescription written by a physician or a medical care person, a PA, whatever, to get marijuana, what's the problem? That's B. A, of course, the overarching issue is what in the hell, why in the hell is marijuana still illegal in this country, no matter what it's used for? You know, if you want to use it to ease the nausea from chemo, okay, that's probably why God put it here on earth. But if you also want to use it just to get stoned and have a good time, okay, whose business is it other than your own? You know, I'm assuming you're an adult. I've said it before, if you're a kid and you do drugs, you're really, you're demonstrating your absolute stupidity. And I don't care what the drug is, cigarettes, alcohol, or any mind-altering drug. And why is that, Mike? Well, it's because cigarettes and booze will kill you, but mind-altering drugs prevent the natural development of your ability to make rational decisions. It impedes your ability to decide what is real and what isn't real. And in a world like the one that you 14-year-olds are entering into, you need all your faculties to decide what's real and what isn't real, because about 90% of what you see out there is not real. You've got to be able to make those determinations. And smoking dope or trying to be cool because, oh, man, I did drugs and partied, you're being a jackass. You really are. You're being a jerk. Now, once you're an adult, then you have a legal, ethical, and moral right to be a jerk. And how do I justify that? Look at all the Republicans. So marijuana should be legal. There is no question. It's not even open for debate. Not even. You know, excuse me, tobacco is legal. Tobacco kills 500,000 people a year. How many people have died from marijuana toxicity? That's right. None. Anyway, the decision by Eric Holder blew by everybody except the Huffington Post's Ryan Grimm, and then Raw Story picked it up. I haven't seen anything about this in the news. Have you? The DEA continued to carry out these raids after Obama's inauguration, despite a campaign promise by Barack Obama to cease the practice. But asked at a press conference Wednesday, Eric Holder said it wouldn't be the administration's policy any longer. Eric Holder said, quote, "What the president said during the campaign, you'll be surprised to know, will be consistent with what we'll be doing in law enforcement. He was my boss during the campaign. He is formally and technically and by law my boss now. What he said during the campaign is now American policy," end quote. Excuse me. So, you know, once again, Obama is, good God, living up to a campaign promise. When he talked about lowering taxes, he lived up to the campaign promise. When he talked about a budget that was going to focus on infrastructure, he lived up to the campaign promise. I mean, just on and on and on. This is such a shock. As a candidate, when he said he did not subscribe to the idea of illegal wiretapping and retroactive immunity for the telecoms who did that. And now it seems that that position has done a 180. Of course, just like Bob wrote tonight in A Moment with Bob, that causes great reflection, doesn't it? When we find out, excuse me, that the State Department or the CIA or whatever is going to continue to send people to countries that torture, you pause and think, wait a second. On the other hand, when we find out that Obama is going to apply the rule of law to people who have been held in prison for 5 years by the Bush crime family, that also is in keeping. You know, I don't know. At this point, you places your bet and you takes your chance, dude. You understand what I'm saying here? Obama is doing some things and he's not doing other things. And it's got your average liberal just all a Twitter. Doesn't know which way to go. Republicans, of course, just want to see him dead. They want his city. They want his, Chicago to be bombed with nuclear weapons and laugh and cheer when that's brought up by the sick son of a bitch, Bolton, who used to pollute the United Nations. But it's hard to determine. How long has he been in office? A month? So. Also, the return of the idea of allowing American citizens to take note of our young men and women who come home in coffins because they have died for corporate America. You know, just going to the Iraq War, why do we have a military presence in Iraq? Why do we have soldiers in Iraq? The original idea for going into Iraq was a total lie. Everything said about Iraq was a filthy lie put out there so that corporate America could make a fortune and steal, just steal left and right. They stole billions, if not $1 trillion was stolen by these corporations who went to Iraq. And they did it dancing and drinking and laughing on the coffins of 4,000-plus dead Americans, and God only knows, or Allah only knows, how many dead Iraqis. This is real sick stuff. This is the kind of stuff that defines this country for what it is, the largest terrorist state on earth. I don't give a damn whether you agree with that or not. It is simply the truth. Now, part of maintaining our ability to be a terrorist state was to deny people in this country the shock of seeing actual Americans coming home in coffins. Oh, no, we'll have none of that. We'll have none of that. So I believe that went into effect during the Bush years. I'm not sure. But now the policy has been modified. I won't say reversed. Robert Gates, a former member of the Bush crime family and now the defense secretary with the Obama administration, has decided to allow photos of these flag draped caskets as they arrive at Dover Air Force Base, Delaware, if the families of the troops agree. That's according to the Associated Press. The current ban was put in place, like I mentioned, in 1991 by George Herbert Walker Bush. And of course, the whole idea of this is to hide the human cost of the wars that these pig bastards have sent our people into to benefit corporate America. Somebody please tell me, was Iraq a threat to the United States? Not even. Was Afghanistan a threat? Oh, please, for Christ's sake, they still live in the 14th century. If we really wanted to go after the training camps in Afghanistan that allegedly produced the bombers who came to this country, very simple. You cut off the money. Who was it that said follow the money? Where'd the money come from? Saudi Arabia. So how do you cut off the money? Bomb the Christ out of Saudi Arabia. That's what you do. Blow up Riyadh. I mean, come on, really, if that's the intent, to get mired down in what we're bogged down in now in Afghanistan, this is insanity. This is insanity. But as far as Iraq and Afghanistan are concerned, it has nothing to do with the safety of America. Anyone with a lick of sense will tell you that we are more unsafe now, Americans, than we were before we decided to destroy two countries, destabilize them, and turn them into piggy banks for these filthy corporations who have stolen at least $1 trillion probably more. We'll be right back.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So Gates, Secretary Gates, Defense Secretary Gates, has taken the weasel way out and said he's pretty much going to leave it up to the families. And this is strange. And what I'm going to say will probably sound strange to you, but these people are dying. These soldiers and Marines are dying. Ostensibly for us. Isn't that what the military is all about? Now, I realize that that's not the reality. They're dying for corporate America and the thieves and liars and killers who sent them there. But ostensibly, traditionally, they're dying to preserve our freedom. They, in fact, in a certain respect, when they come back to the United States, I'm not talking about the private funerals. When they come back to the United States, they are our people, the entire country. Yes, they are also husbands, wives, sons, daughters, brothers, sisters, to specific people in this country. But because they took an oath, they were sworn in, they became, for a period of time, property of the United States government. And the United States government, I realize this is quaint, is a government of, by, and for the people. So the soldiers are of, by, and for us. They come from us. They go die for us. And who is it that's going to say, we will take your people away, but you will not see them come back in their coffins? Who's going to say that? The only people who will say that are the people, in my opinion. I'm not talking about the private graveside services that should belong strictly to the family and anyone they want to invite. I'm talking about when those C-130s land at Dover Air Force Base. And so far this year, 4,251 members of the U.S. military whose remains were recoverable have been placed in coffins, draped with a flag, and brought back. When they touch down at Dover, who do they belong to? Who do those coffins and flags and the remains inside, who do they belong to? Who did they die for? So the only people, in my opinion, who want to keep them hidden from view. Let me just quote Paul Rykoff, who's the executive director of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and himself a combat veteran. He says, quote, "All too often, the sacrifices of our military are hidden from view. The sight of flag-draped coffins is and should be a sobering reminder to all Americans of the ultimate sacrifice our troops have made and the high price of freedom," end quote. Now, while I would disagree respectfully with Mr. Rykoff, that our troops have died, that's part of the price of freedom. That may have been true at one time, and I understand it's necessary for us to continue that mythology. But I simply cannot believe that our soldiers, our Marines, are dying in Iraq and Afghanistan in order for us to be free. I'm sorry, folks, I can't go there. And with respect to Paul Rykoff, I simply cannot. Secretary Gates said he initially asked for the ban to be reviewed a year ago. And he was advised then that family members might feel uncomfortable with opening the ceremonies to media for privacy reasons, or that the relatives might feel pressure to attend the services despite financial stresses. Again, no one, and I would protest this, no one is suggesting that the grief that the families experience once their loved one does go home, and the grief that is experienced. You've all been to funerals, so have I. The grief that is felt and expressed at a funeral service should be shared with anybody other than the people that the survivors want there. But when those troops come home in the C-130s, those flag-draped coffins, nobody knows who's in those coffins, except the people carrying them respectfully off of the airplanes. And I doubt if the honor guard knows the names, rank of the people in those coffins. At that point, it is symbolic. It is symbolism of the death and destruction rendered against American lives and families because of decisions made by Bush and Cheney in this instance. Regardless of whether you like him, don't care, or hate him, not a single member of the U.S. military died during the 8 years in combat, during the 8 years of the Clinton administration. And just let the statement stand, because yes, he invaded, he bombed, and was Clinton's policies resulted in the deaths of a lot of people in Middle Europe, but not a single American soldier died in combat during the Clinton years. And so far, we have had 4,251 members of the military have died in Iraq, and at least 584 members of the military have died in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Uzbekistan as a result of our invasion of Afghanistan in 2001. So the policy now will be that it's up to the families. How that's going to be affected, I don't know. But the American public has an obligation, not a right, an obligation to view the coffins of the people that we have allowed to go die for American corporatism.
Not ready to make nice, it's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour, a couple of comments here. Prairie 2 writes about the return of our military dead. In Great Britain, the return of the fallen is always carried on television. In Canada, the public is notified in advance, and they line the highway from the airport as the procession passes. The Bush crime family threatened people with prison if they lifted this veil of secrecy. And from Seattle, Jude, who is a member of, and I believe the founder of the peace organization Women Standing, she writes, Mike, today I sent an email to the Department of Defense, especially to Mr. Gates, stating that I was grateful that we now may be able to pay our respect to those killed in the war. My letter was from the perspective of a mother whose son is a veteran, and also as a retired hospice nurse. It is a critical piece, the viewing of caskets of those who have been killed. It is necessary to our own process to personally grieve and to support those families who no longer have a loved one. To stand in the well of grief takes courage and strength. When I read each night from Jim Sheeler's book, Final Salute, I'm a heartbeat away from another real grief experience. The photos are exquisitely revealing. And some nights, I just hold open one page. Picture this, Mike. A woman named Catherine Cathy lays over the casket of her husband, Jim Cathy. The flag becomes the point of connecting his casket and her pregnant belly. How can one not view that and not feel? We need to feel, Mike. We need to feel all of it. It is one of the doors that unlocks our own humanity, our own vulnerability. If there ever was a time to join humanity together, this is the time. Peace, Jude. Yeah, and that's so well said and so well stated. Yes, the connection of grieving. We don't grieve, do we? Because we don't know about. the deaths of all the people that occur in the United States. There are children that every day, every week, there are children that die, women that die, men that die, old people, young people. People die tragically, peacefully, screaming, not screaming, sedated, consciously dying. I mean, on and on and on. We don't connect to that. We connect to the deaths in our own families, our own circle of friends. But beyond those two circles, family and friends, there's a greater circle. If we are going to continue to use war as an instrument of foreign policy, and if we are going to continue to tell ourselves that we're doing this in order to preserve freedom, justice, and the American way, then God damn it, do we not also have the obligation, as Jude points out, to have the courage to face what a returning coffin draped in a flag represents. And what does it represent, Truth Seeker? Does it represent one more victory for freedom, or does it represent one more victory for corporate America? What does it represent? You see? Oops, I'm getting pissed off again. When the first Bush decided, after Gulf War I, no more pictures of returning coffins. Clinton never rescinded it, but there was no reason to on his watch, because there were no returning coffins. And then this little bastard, Bush II, who made it a matter of U.S. policy. No. You just go shop. We'll take care of the wars. You miserable bastard. Oh, my God. Oh, calm down. He's not president anymore. Just take a deep breath, okay? But when that occurred, I personally felt like something had been taken from me. Not a ghoulish kind of peeping Tom thing. But as Jude points out, something that connects me and motivates me to bring an end to this. And this is why the Bush crime family wanted no coffins. You show people coffins of returning soldiers, and after enough of them, then the people say, no, goddammit, that's enough. No more of this. And that's what the Bush crime family did not want to happen. These dirty, sneaky, cowardly bastards, every single one of them. So it was critical to me when I found out, or when I discovered, that the people who ostensibly were dying in my name, that's what the Bush bastard told us anyway, that those people, I was to be denied watching them return to the country that they died for. I mean, that is obscene. That's the obscenity. And again, Robert Gates' weaselly approach to this, well, it's up to the families. It's up to the families about the funerals, yes, of course. But when these coffins come home, they're coming home to us. Because you know why? We sent them there. Oh, no, we didn't. Yes, we did. We sent them there in refusing to remove the Bush bastard and his whole cohort from office once we realized what they were doing. Now, you can't escape it, Truth Seeker. I can't escape it. Let me rephrase it. The deaths of these people are as much on my hands as they are on anybody else's in this country, because we did nothing to stop it. Do I believe in collective guilt in most instances? No. In this instance, yes. And Reg writes, just a reminder, what I said about bombing the Saudis before we ever bomb the Afghans, because the money to run the madrasas, where young Muslim people are taught to kill, to adopt a form of Islam that I think the Prophet would spit on, the form of Islam that treats women the way it treats women, that treats people who are not followers of the faith as if they deserve to die. That is not Islam. That is some kind of sick perversion of Islam, just like we have a sick perversion of Christianity in this country. You know, it's not unusual to find religions that have become perverted and perverse. But rather than bomb the Saudis, Reg writes, we should bomb Fort Benning before we bomb the Saudis. Just a reminder that we have trained far more terrorists than anyone else. Best example is U.S. Army School of the Americas based in Fort Benning, Georgia. Graduates of the School of the Americas are responsible for some of the worst human rights abuses in Latin America. Among the SOA's nearly 60,000 graduates are notorious dictators Manuel Noriega, Omar Torrijos of Panama, both of them of Panama, Leopoldo Galtieri and Roberto Viola of Argentina, Juan Velasco Alvarado of Peru, Guillermo Rodriguez of Ecuador, and Hugo Banzer Suarez of Bolivia. Not to mention, thanks, Reg, not to mention all the torture chamber operators who did not become their country's dictator. You know, that's another thing that was just swept under the rug, that Bush 1 and Reagan and Oliver North and the rest of these murderers got away with, thanks to Bill Clinton. Because he was going to look forward and not back. So what happens? It's repeated, only exponentially worse. Repeated in what we've done under Bush 2. And to prevent something like that, all Clinton would have had to have done was open a full-scale investigation or allow some agency of his government to do that. Is Obama going to do it? We don't know, do we? Back to your phone calls. Who do we have here? Let's go to Michael, who is calling from Fontana, California, listening on Sirius. Michael, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how you doing today?
I'm all right. How are you?
Well, you know, I was all nice and happy and everything. I was really looking forward to listening to your show. You know, I found you on the radio and you were humorous, but now you've been talking about, you know, all the Iraq and all that and stuff. I got two sons over there.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's a real soft spot for me, you know.
Well, I would think. What's your overall take on what we're doing there?
Well, you know, I don't think we had any reason to be over there to begin with. And, you know, it's sad. You know, I have two sons over there right now, and you know, I just pray they come back.
Sure.
But, you know, it's just a crazy world. You know, people are all confused and mixed up. They want to, you know, say African-American and all this. You know what? We're just all Americans. It doesn't matter what color you are.
Well, that's true. But if you don't mind my asking, I'll back off of this real quick, Michael, if you don't want me to ask the question and you let me know.
Oh, no, you can ask it anyway.
Well, I was just going to say, do you feel that your sons serving in Iraq or Afghanistan are serving American interests, are serving the interests of we the people, guaranteeing our freedom, or do you feel that your sons are there for a different reason?
Oh, no, they're not serving for us. You know, I mean, I love my sons, but, you know, they're not serving to keep us free. They're serving to put some money in some ignorant fool's pocket. Excuse me, but I just want to, you know, use foul language, but I'm not going to because I'm on the radio.
Well, I appreciate that. I hope your boys make it home okay, Michael. I do.
You know, I really like America. I mean, you know, I've been
sure,
here.
Sure, me too. I heard Hartman say this today, Tom Hartman, and I agree. I'm a nationalist, not in the negative or nasty or imperialistic sense of that word. But I like my country. I like what we've tried to do for 230 years. I acknowledge all the crap and the garbage that was present when we started. But I like, you know, I like it here. And that's one of the reasons I get so enraged when I see people try to screw it up. And I'm sure you feel the same way, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, heck, I drive truck for a living, and I work hard. You know, right. Yeah, granted, I sit in the bucket for a long time, but, you know, I do a flatbed. I got to get out and I got to work hard.
Sure.
And you know what? I'm proud of the things I do because I've worked for everything that I got.
I hear you.
You know, I'm proud of my boys because they believe in what they're doing, you know, but.
Right.
Yeah, it's, we just need to stand together, you know, and raise up against all this hypocrisy.
Well, I agree, and I think over the course of our history, I'm talking about the U.S., that's been the idea with so many people who really love the country, and this may be a political statement. I'm sorry to drop it in, but to me it seems like that's mostly been folks who would be identified as liberals. We're the ones who have said, look, let's stand together. Ben Franklin said, we got to hang together or we'll all hang separately. Hey, I got to go. Michael, thank you so much. I hope you call again now that you found the program, okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right, sir. Take care.
Who was evil? It was all so black and white. But the years have taught me better. Good and evil do not matter. Their words are masters scattered to hide their bloody hands. And what's truth and what's illusion? What's order or confusion? Who's winning or who's losing? Just depends on where you stand.
It's 8 minutes before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program and answered your calls. Ben Birch, our technical advisor. Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, who are ethical advisors to the program. And Bruce Enberg, our economic correspondent. The executive producer is Catherine Bay. All right. Back to, let's see if we got time. Yeah, I think we do. Jerry is calling from New York, listening on Sirius. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Excellent show.
No, I'm not Tom.
I had a comment about taxes early from the first hour.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that apart from them hoarding money, the purpose of taxes also slows down the printing of money by the government because the money has to circulate back to the government. They're the only ones who provide it.
Yeah.
And by, you know, you need taxes to redistribute money to cut down the amount of money that the government's printing. I liked your other comments. I was going to comment on the fact that you characterize Republicans, but I think you should call them the way they make to earn their living. They're cannibals. We've become a class of technological cannibals that look the other way.
I think this is one of the points you've
been talking about.
I can accept that, sure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but that doesn't create any moral abhorrence as far as that goes. And the other thing with the war in Iraq, I think it should be, you know, it is a business. They put 30,000 tons of depleted uranium in Iraq so that the area is basically biological uninhabitable, but that's never really been an issue to examine what our behavior's been about because it's just been a huge, you know, we have 60-70% of our economy is like Rome. It is dedicated to the military, and they have to keep selling their vehicles. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been involved in that region for what, 50, 60 years? And it's just a huge money machine. I mean, Iran-Contra was part of that also. You know, we were moneying the waters back then, and it's just been great for business.
Yeah,
wouldn't
it be nice to be in the business? First of all, the war as a business, of course, goes all the way back to the turn of the 19th century. It goes, Smedley Butler, general, two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, wrote, "War is a racket." You can find it if you Google it. War is a racket. So it's been going on for a long time. Their corporate wars, the most recent were the corporate oil wars initiated by Bush 1 and Bush 2, and they were designed specifically to steal another country's assets because we're just hell-bent on destroying ourselves with the carbon-based fuel. So, yeah, it's not new. It's just gotten more blatant. And still, we are told in this country that our wars of opportunity are somehow protecting freedom, when the exact opposite is true. If ever a language had been totally prostituted, it has been since Gulf War One, completely, Vietnam too, but I mean Gulf War One and the attack on Iraq and Afghanistan, where these military enterprises were, we were told, designed to keep us free. Which is not the case. And frankly, Jerry, I'm as sick of it as I think you are, too. Hey, listen, I got to go. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Cannibals is a good word for Republicans. Yeah. Greg is calling from San Diego, listening on Sirius. Hey, Greg. We only have we got about half a minute here, pal. I'm sorry.
Hey, Mike, I just want to tell you something. You like the white Farrakhan. I like listening to you because it's all about facts. And I want to, say it real quick. I'm 37 years old. I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, went to a Jesuit high school, and I was had a lot of good white friends. I remember that what kind of kept it all together and wouldn't have letting it gone this far, there was a core group of white Americans who had values, and I think now that group is commercialized, and until they stand up, you know, it's like running a business. If 90% of your customers are a particular race or income, that's who you focus on. I just want to put out on the airways that white America needs to stand up and put a stop to this, because if they don't, the rest of us are just caught in the middle.
I hear you, Greg. Thanks, man. I got to go. I hope you call again. Appreciate you checking in. I'll see you tomorrow night, everybody. Take care, okay? Seriously. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova. It's not Nova anymore. It's on Second Thought Radio Network.